Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. It's been a while. Well, we sort of didn't do one last week, but we did an extra slice one after Chelsea. So, you know, stick it up your ass. We have a full house today, actually. It's been a while. Happy 2017, lads. There we go. Seb and Raj, both here. You've pulled through now. You can finally face talking to me again.
I think the expiry date on Happy New Year's passed by now.
Well, not between us though, you know. This is the first like fully completed pod of 2017, I think.
But we've spoken to each other lots since the year started.
Yeah, but that's just bitching about people from Twitter and our WhatsApp group, isn't it, really?
Essentially.
Yeah. Everyone's got one of those, haven't they? I'm sure. Let's not do all this New Year's Eve guff. New Year's Eve, New Year's stuff. I have no idea what I'm on about. We broke the Pulis curse, lads. That was good. I think you'll both agree. Significant result, what do you think? Seb, let's put it to you.
Not significant because of who it was against, just because of the form we seem to have arrived at. I think that was pretty significant. I think we're playing easily. I suppose West Brom, one of those teams that you kind of, if you don't play well, you don't necessarily beat, or, you know, you draw 1-1 with somehow. But it was pretty ruthless. And yeah, it was nice to see. I mean, I get the sort of the cathartic nature of beating him after what happened last season. But I mean, it was more that I think we'd have taken apart anybody that we faced. It was that good. It's one of the best performances of Pochettino. It's certainly within top five performances of Pochettino's reign, just because it was had everything. It was just ruthless, entertaining, a lot of pace. You know, looked very secure at the backs. Full house.
Would you got anything to add on that one, Raj Baines?
No, it was a really good game. In terms of how well we played, I don't think it was a good game for West Brom. It was just one of those where they seem to be enjoying their football. It's not about it being particularly professional. It just seems that it happened last season where they got into that groove where these sorts of scorelines became inevitable because they seem to enjoy doing that to teams as much as anything else, which is, you know, what makes watching them so infectious. So I enjoyed it in that respect.
It's lovely, isn't it, being in that place again where, you know, when you're talking about, oh, you know, who are the standout players in Tottenham's team, and you kind of, again, go through the entire squad, at least I would say, you know, in that game, the West Brom game, you looked at every single man that started and you think, well, they all serve a very unique purpose within this unit and they're all just fucking brilliant and they're all firing at the moment. They're all really playing very well.
Big it's only loss. Been a month since you two were bloodletting as well, so...
Yeah, I know.
So. Yeah.
I think it's... I don't know, it's just... It's interesting to... Again, I believe I said at the time, it is a mark of our quality that we were in contention despite not really having played that well, I didn't think, or at least having played that cohesively, shall we say. But now it just seems to be that, you know, we've been going up through the gears and now we're kind of... We're getting there now. At just the right time as well, hopefully, with this Diego Costa lark, that Chelsea can start to drop a few points, but, you know.
They'll be fine with or without him.
You reckon?
Yeah. They've looked fine with or without him whenever he's not been there this year. So it's just one of those things. I think he'll be there till the end of this season, no matter what. I think that's the agreement that they'll likely come to, and he'll probably go his own way in the summer for a ridiculous amount of money into his back pocket. So you can't really complain. I don't think any one of us would be turning that down.
No. Hat-trick for Harry Kane, obviously, on the week that his child was born, and he's now one goal away from Diego Costa, despite having missed, I think, what, 7 games this season?
Yeah, somewhat like that. Did you see Karen Brady had a go at him in paper? She has a column in a paper, and she had some weird, like, it was a horrible take in terms of, like, it was a clear stretch, but she just, she took up, some sort of problem with the way he worded his announcement of the birth of his first child. And she tried to, like, shame him for that for some reason. It looked really desperate. It don't look good for her to do that to some young lad who's had his first child. It's not like, you know, she's expecting royals to come out with a town crier outside hospital to say it. He just put a tweet out, bless him, and she looks...
Attention, Rog. Same old Karen Brady, though, isn't it? It's like she's, for as long as she's had a newspaper column, she just says things for effect.
But it's not even as if it was like an actual point. It was just a really
really contrived. But it's just
I don't
Brady
think she has anything to do with Harry Kane or anything like that. It was just a really weird thing to do. Just sort of, I don't think there's any sort of happiness between both clubs. Quite publicly, so maybe that was it. But it's just really, really odd little sidetrack to the weekend when that started popping up in the timeline, and you read it and you're like, is she written this or someone written it for her? What's happened here?
It's anything to deflect away from that absolute circus, though, isn't it? Of that club,
yeah.
Like it's bizarre. But yeah, Harry Kane is a man in form at the moment. You can't help but feel we might be in trouble. Trouble's the wrong word, but we definitely wouldn't be performing at the level that we are were it not for him, given Janssen's showing in the FA Cup the other day. Mm. Do you worry at all that there might be a creeping over reliance on Harry Kane as we come into the crunch end?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that's kind of true of a lot of the players at the moment, because I think that the precious commodity, Kane's value speaks for itself, of course, but I think the precious commodity is probably the chemistry. I think that sort of everyone's playing well, but everyone has kind of reached a sort of a point of critical understanding of what their role is supposed to be, like from fullbacks to, you know, centre-halves moving the ball into midfield, because that's been the big change. We don't seem to be reliant on giving the ball to Moussa Dembélé and hoping he beats a couple of players to progress up the field. Got a sort of an additional centre back to do that now, so I'd worry about losing anyone. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like saying it. You could kind of apply that to most teams, though. It's like sort of what would happen to Chelsea if they lost Kante, or if they do in fact lose Costa, or you know, it's kind of, I don't know.
It's that old adage, isn't it? Like, I think, I can't remember who it was. Some journalist last year tweeted something like, you know, Tottenham without Kane's goals equal not very good. Yeah. It's like, well, how astonishing, you know?
Barcelona without Messi, you know, Real without Ronaldo. I mean, you know, it's pretty weak journalism.
You're saying Kane's as good as Messi and Ronaldo there? So.
Yeah, definitely, mate, definitely. Oh, combined. Yeah.
All right, here's one though. Like, jokes aside on that one, you know,
where are you going to go?
Well,
with this?
We kind of, with the weekend's opponents in mind, we kind of seem to have this like line that, you know, well, Aguero is obviously a lot better than Kane. But how much longer can you consider that to be absolute, like absolute truth, really? I mean, the kind of level and the performances and the return that Kane has now as at least a league club striker.
Yeah.
Is it that ridiculous to say he's on par with that type of player now in that sort of bracket?
Would we ever compare him? I mean, I think kind of the thing with Aguero is that sort of he's just such a different type of forward. In terms, well, stylistically, of course, but in terms of the way he moves and the way he scores goals, and I mean, Kane is, I mean, I appreciate that he does a lot more than the, kind of the old traditional English centre forward. Of course he does, but he is a bit more English in nature, and Aguero has that sort of South American glint to his play, kind of that allure. I don't know. I mean, I don't really care for much beyond the economy of it and the sort of, well, look at the goal tally. It's pretty hard to argue with it. I don't know. I think there'll always be a little bit of a bit of snobbery towards Kane because of the way he looks, because of where he comes from, because of the way he speaks. You know, I don't think that comparison will ever make it into the mainstream. I think we'd just, you know, be happy that he performs at the level that he does.
Why won't someone stick up for white English men, Seb?
There you go. Exactly, mate. Exactly.
That's it. But no, the boys amazing. I mean, just to kind of clarify where I'm coming from, really, I mean, you can obviously put down the fact that Aguero is probably, you know, more naturally gifted, shall we say. And there's a part of me that wants to say he's more technically gifted, but I don't know. Kane's shown an immense versatility to his play. Like you said, he's not just, he often kind of gets lumped into that. You know, he's the second coming of the traditional English centre forward, but I just think that's so reductive because he basically looks a bit like Alan Shearer and Teddy Sheringham.
That's it. He doesn't really play anything like Alan Shearer. In any way at all. And there's no kind of, I mean, given what I've said, it sounds a bit ridiculous because there is no English centre forward who I would directly compare him to. I don't know. I think
he's fucking brilliant. Dele Alli as well. Apparently attracting interest from abroad, although, you know, that's probably paper talk, could be not, but we sort of brushed on this before that you can't really see him going anywhere for quite a while. But are you agreeing with a lot of the hype that's being thrown his way at the moment, Raj, at all, Dele?
He's been really good. Sort of the change of formation and him sort of settling into the season's been really good for his form. So it's not surprising that sort of now, especially around a window, people will be talking about a sort of thing because, you know, staff writers have got jobs to fulfil. But it's one of those things where it's going to take a ridiculous fee for him to leave, a bail-size fee. We keep topping up these contracts to the point where we're in such a safe position with the players that they can't really force their way out of the club for anything more than a world record fee. So it's, we're in the best possible position you can be in modern football, especially with the growth of China. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing because I think the point's been made enough times now that they're doing nothing different over there than England did when the sort of the infancy of the Premier League and getting players over here and growing this league. And so it's not really distasteful. It's sort of almost hypocritical in the way that people are sort of laughing at one set of money compared to another.
Totally. I mean, it's kind of, I often use them as the yardstick, but I mean, you could even apply it to, you know, a team like AC Milan, Ajax. When you consider that clubs like Southampton, even us, probably now have more punching power than an AC Milan or an Ajax, it shows you why English football doesn't really have a leg to stand on with this Chinese money stuff. Like, it, I don't know. It's, I think it's revealed a pretty ugly side in quite a lot of people. I'm not saying that everyone that says, you know, the Chinese, you know, who questions the motives of a player that goes to China, at least their ambition in through the lens of, say, like success in Europe, is like some, you know, awful racist or anything. But at the same time, I mean, to just kind of, I think it's more the personal fucking hell. It's the personal attacks on the players that bother me quite a bit. Like, as much as I don't like the bloke, this whole kind of Diego Costa's a mercenary, he's this, he's that. Well, what does he really owe Chelsea,
mate,
at all?
I cannot tell you how quickly I'd be on the plane to China if someone offered me that kind of money.
£600,000 a week.
I wouldn't even pack. Grab the passport, go. I mean, it's just, you know, I kind of... Also, what Raj was saying about China and the kind of the parallels, really interesting, because actually I would argue that sort of the intentions in China, there is at least an attempt to be more organic in the future. And I'd say that the infrastructure or the intended infrastructure in China is a little bit more advanced than it was over here, in the sense that money came into the English game through Sky and sort of global visibility. But, China is littered with kind of, whether you want to call it cynical or not, with sort of academies and, you know, football has been placed on the Chinese national curriculum. There's a real intention to kind of grow the sport from younger generations over a sort of a 10, 20, 30 year period. Whereas we did all the spending, brought all the sort of the expensive players over to this country, and then thought, oh shit, we better actually do something about our homegrown players about 20 years later.
They've actually limited the amount of foreign players that can play in a team at one time already.
They did that on Sunday.
So they've got one eye on sort of maximising national interest and sort of improving their national team. So yeah, I don't think any sort of criticism of them is, it's not baseless, but a lot of it is a straw man argument and quite a lot of it is laced with fear of our own game being threatened by elsewhere, because we do have this, I'll say we, the sort of royal we as a country rather than sort of individuals, but we as a nation tend to have this sort of imperialist thinking about, you know, being British and being the best, and that probably comes from sort of...
I think it's European, Raj. I think there's a lot of it we encounter here, but I think it's kind of, it's many European attitude in that, you know, if you're not playing in Europe, fuck off. You know, there's no acceptance that to become prominent, the other countries and other territories have the right to develop leagues themselves.
Remember all the rhetoric that surrounded Neymar, because he held out quite a while before he came over to Barcelona, and I can just remember there was all this kind of like, what the hell does he want to stay in Brazil for? What's he want to play? You know, like it's just nothing. You know, playing in front of hundreds of thousands of people week in, week out. Probably still earning a decent salary, playing, you know, living in a pretty good country with decent weather, so on and so forth. It's just like it's something unfathomable.
Well, people forgot about Neymar, that he was 16 when he made his debut in Brazil. So I think he was only 19, 20 when he actually joined Barcelona. So it's not as if he played his best years there and then came here for the money. He was a child and stayed in his homeland for as long as he felt comfortable, and then moved when sort of he felt old enough and comfortable enough to, and when Barcelona offered his dad enough behind the back of the taxman. Yeah. So there's that. Yeah. But this whole, the past couple of weeks of football, to be honest, especially the discussion of football, there's sort of, it's not been great. It's sort of, especially with like the fact that we're having to sit here and discuss sort of who's better at a Kane and Aguero, this sort of pissing contest mentality is so limited and stuff. It's there's no real use to it. I'm not blaming you two, because it is a prevalent sort of part of it, but you know, even down to the fact that, you know, people were having arguments over whose scorpion kick was better and shit like that. It's just sort of
football now, though. That's the idiots have won the war.
But lads, Messi or Ronaldo, come on.
And you can only choose one for some reason.
it's really strange. It seems to have, you know, just gone into hyperdrive over the past few weeks. I've no idea what the catalyst for that is, but the more and more, even with sort of the mainstream or the larger institutions putting out copy and features and things, it seems to be of a sort of this weird wanting to just put a definitive end to things, and it seems really strange that you can't just have a fluid discussion. Yeah, I don't know.
They're undermining football discussion.
Reasonable debate.
To make the Russian Premier League.
That's my bugbear, Ed. I haven't watched the finale of Sherlock yet, but somebody was. I seen somebody online saying that Russia hacked or leaked the finale of Sherlock or something.
What, like, fucking weird, not joking?
Not jokingly. I think it's a real thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a storyline. It's just such a weird fucking time to be alive, man.
You can say that again. Right, so speaking of moneyed elites that are ruining football.
These lot aren't a proper club. I'll happily say that. If you want a definitive one, this is fucking £100 outfit here.
Yeah. Well, we're playing Man City. I'm about to talk to Alex Timperley of Typical City. Hello, Alex Timperley of Typical City. How are you? It's been a while.
Hiya, Jack. I'm good, thanks. Yeah, it has been a while. It's been a year since I've been on here, I think.
I think we had Mooney on. We've had Pollard on, and we've had Mooney on as well.
Both great choices. It's fair play.
Good choices, but, you know, come on. You know you're the best, mate.
That's very kind.
That's it. Well, you know, I'm a kind man. Manchester City. Where do we begin, Alex? Because it's tumultuous. I can't even say the word. Have I said that? Is it tumultuous? Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, tumultuous is right. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think I should just use words that I know how to pronounce instead of trying to sound smart? And
definitely. Well, nah, man, go for the longer words. Just throw them in.
Well, it's Russell Brand, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay. Could I be Tottenham's Russell just Brand? I think I'm too rotund to be Russell Brown, but he's quite skinny, isn't he?
City. I don't know. It's a bit crap at the moment. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's like the problems with the team are just pretty massive, and they're the same problems that we've been saying have been there for ages. It's great to see. Obviously, apart from the goalkeeper, who's new and. It's just a disaster at the moment. Maybe he'll get better. Who knows?
I mean, a lot of people, I mean, you know, I think given the, sort of the stature of the club and the size of Guardiola, in terms of reputation at least, a lot has been kind of, you know, talked about with regard to this. But one thing I'd be interested to get from you is the kind of fan perspective, because I've seen, you know, yourself and a couple of the other City lads that I follow talking about the divide between the club and the fans and the poisonous atmosphere that seems to be developing at the club. And that's something that sort of eluded the media at the moment, as they seem to be focusing mainly on the on pitch stuff. But I just wonder if you could elaborate on that, I guess, for anyone that might not be in the know about some of the stuff that's happening.
That's a good question. It's not at the level of sort of outright protest, but I think the general feeling I get at the moment when I go to games and, you know, see people after is that there is a divide, and it's a weird one because it's sort of, in a way, Modern City's everything we ever wanted, which was to, you know, not be a total laughing stock and not have to worry about relegation every year. And occasionally do well in the FA Cup or whatever. And that's nice and it's good. And we've got some cool players. And, you know, we've got Guardiola now. And that's been on the cards for a long time. So it's kind of nice to see it happening. But at the same time, it's like, it's not so much disrespect for the fans. It's more of just a not really thinking about how stuff affects the fans, if that makes sense at all. It's like, so stuff like, you know, we boo the UEFA thing, the Champions League anthem, quite a lot. It's kind of half because it's funny and it's always on telly and it's just a laugh. And half because, you know, we feel like we've been treated a bit like shit by UEFA, whether that's financial fair play, which is a whole different thing, which can't be asked to talk about anymore, but or even, you know, stuff like getting... The team got fined more for turning up a minute late than the opposition did in the same game for racially abusing Mario Balotelli. You know, stuff like that. It's just kind of built up. And then you get the club and being like, oh, you know, don't boo. It makes us look bad. And it's just like, fuck off. Like, we'll do what we want. Mm. And it's like, well, you know what? It all comes down to me, to the economics of it, which I don't think is an issue unique to City. I imagine Spurs have a similar issue. It's like the areas around the ground and the areas where historically City comes from is they're one of the poorest areas in Europe. Just every time one of those kind of incredibly depressing maps of the poor bits of Europe come out, East Manchester's always on it. And then by the time you got Champions League in there or the third cup game of the month or whatever on top of the season ticket, and then you get the club saying, oh, don't boo, don't do this. And, you know, even Pep being like, oh, it, do this, do that, cheer louder. It's just like, lads, just fuck off. Like, just leave us alone. We'll do what we want because we're the ones who've paid to be there. And there's stuff like that. And also, like, it ties a bit back into Bravo and Guardiola because there's all this, like, there was this air of, like, oh, you must respect them. And again, it's like, well, no. Well, if they earn it, we'll respect them as we would with anyone, but we're not going to sort of genuflect the moment they walk in the ground. It's getting a bit like that. And ticket prices were only frozen last year after everyone kicked off, basically. And it's stuff like that. You think just give the fans a break a little bit because these are the fans who sort of, and it's cliched as it is, but the fans actually did stick with the club through the second division when it looked like it was going under. And then we moved with them to the new ground and filled it up. And it's like, just give us a break a bit. But then you get the other crowd saying, like, oh, we've got to be grateful. We've got to be grateful. And again, it's like, well, no, we are grateful, but we don't have to be. And you can't have the club sort of, and the manager and that just telling us to be respectful and grateful and to be quiet. It just grates. And it's
quite a bizarre relationship, isn't it? That you're supposed to be grovelling to the club. You're supposed to be, just and respecting every single thing that they do just because it.
Yeah, and it does feel like that. And again, a lot, you know, I wrote a thing about how Bravo should be dropped the other day on Civical City. And one of the things I wanted to point out is we were told, oh, Pep's going to come in and it's going to be amazing and there's going to be all this passing and, you know, stuff and playing out from the back and all that. It's like, okay, that's cool. And then as soon as anyone voices, like, hold on, I feel like other teams might have noticed we pass out from the back and maybe we should try something else, you get everyone being like, oh, just have faith. It's like, that's not what we're saying. We're just, you know, we're just saying maybe. It's not quite the promised land yet, or the players aren't up to it at the moment, you know. And then it's all like, no, you got to keep that quiet. And it's just like, oh, and it's just a symptom of a lot of, you know, disconnect of modern football, I would imagine. And like I said, I doubt City the only club with a fan base who feels like that at the moment, especially the Premier League.
I mean, do you feel, I know this runs the risk of kind of veering into that sort of territory where you start bringing up intangibles and gut feelings and that kind of stuff, but you know, it's football. It's what we're here to do. We have half the picture anyway of what's going on. Even the sort of most intellectual of fans, they still don't really get the full picture. But just from the outside, I mean, there's obviously a reductive narrative either way surrounding Pep Guardiola. You have the kind of like, he's come to the Premier League and he thought he was going to walk it and he's a fraud really. And then you kind of have it the other way of like, you know, anyone that can't see what Guardiola's doing is either a little Englander or they're a moron. I think that, you know, as time's gone on, and especially sort of the way you've been playing now, the narratives probably are meeting in the middle a little bit. I'm probably being a little bit harsh there, and you know, it's not as true anymore. I think there is probably a bit more constructive conversation around Guardiola now. But that aside, I think one of the things that sort of stood out for me was against Everton. It was quite strange to see him cut the sort of figure he did on the touchline to, I mean, I appreciate it. It must be particularly frustrating and there is a hell of a lot of pressure on him, but it didn't project the best image to have the manager sort of sat there with his arms folded, just looking like he was kind of giving up a bit.
I think early indications are there's a good chance that we're going to break him before the 3 years are over, because, you know, it's sort of linked slightly back to the fans. Like, we're not Barca or Bayern fans. We don't really need this sort of world-class artistic football. We just want to sort of win games and have a good time.
Smash United.
Well, yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. Do well in the Premier League. It's way more important to us. And all this stuff like, oh, you know, we're meeting our goals in this area, or this much defensive fucking passing around in a U shape around the pitch, or all the City fans are just like, yeah, and what? And like, and I think it's fed into this atmosphere that he probably does feel quite alone in times like that when he's 4-0 down to Everton, as his body language showed. But you know what? Like, it's kind of was his fault that we were 4-0 down to Everton. Like, I don't know what to say, really. Like, he's stuff like that. His body language isn't good. Maybe all the people calling him bold on Twitter have finally got to him. But like, it's so many issues which have just been pointed out for years, and it's like he stomps around the technical area like as if he can't believe this is happening to him. But it's like, yeah, but you know, we got our fullbacks have got a combined age of 120. We've got Otamendi in defence. Like, we've got John Stones, who's is obviously going to be good, but at the moment he's like, what is he, 22, or I don't know, something like that, and he's trying to adapt to playing in the Champions League after playing at Barnsley and Goodison Park. And you got Bravo in goal, who, you know, is the only lad on the pitch who's allowed to use his hands, and he can't stop the ball going in the net. And it's stuff like that. And it does contribute to Pep's body language. And he does have a little bit of a Mardy streak to him, which we all do, but we're not all football managers. And I do think you're right to notice it, because it obviously transmits to the players on the pitch. Like, you can see it kind of happening in real time. And it is bizarre.
It is. That's it. It just seems quite bizarre. It seemed a bit end days AVB with us. I can't imagine this happening, really. Well, I'm about to completely contradict myself now, but it's one of those things where you wouldn't have been overly surprised if after that game you're like, yeah, Guardiola's quit. You know, he's sad enough.
He did look like he was having his drop. I can't see him quitting. I mean, he's had strops before. I mean, it's not like, you know, all the stats, you know, the weirdos who rely on pure statistics with no context, they've sort of like created this image of him as a kind of placid, ice cold tactician.
Oh, and that's total bollocks, isn't it?
Well, it's just not the case. Like, he regularly was just fuming at Barca, and he let the pressure get to him by him, because he is actually a normal person in some ways, like the rest of us.
Apparently, he even has lunch.
I've heard sometimes. I've heard he very strictly regiments dinner at City, though. So, well, you know, he might be some sort of weird robot after all. Who knows? But it's a bit odd. And January, in his first season, he's already sort of looking a bit bemused. He had a bit of a 1,000-yard stare going on, didn't he, when he was sat on. I don't know. I reckon there's loads going on that we don't know. And it's his first winter break and all this, and he's probably enjoying Manchester and learning about a new city and things. I don't know. I do think we sometimes underestimate it. And I think AVB is a really good example of that, how managers actually do need time to settle in just as much as players do sometimes. But who knows? Next year he could charge on and win everything. But this year I think the race is done, to be honest. And we just need to get top four and move on and get rid of some of our really old players.
Because that's an interesting point that you raise on there, because yeah, one of the clickbaity headlines was Guardiola to swing axe, mass clear out in summer. Who would you anticipate is kind of on their way out? I mean, your defence kind of looks... Otamendi's bizarre.
Well, there's three categories, right? So there's the players you forgot still play for City who are going, so that's like...
Do you still have Roque Santa Cruz on, Brooks?
No, thankfully not. He was only there for 4 or 5 years, though, so, you know, that time passed quite slowly, as I'm sure you can imagine. But yeah, no, there's players like Bonny, Wilfred Bonny, who's obviously failing at Stoke, just as he failed at City. Mangala, apparently, being quite bad at Valencia. I mean, obviously, I only watch Premier League, so I'm not really sure how he's doing in Spain. Apparently not very well. That's the first category of all of them. They'll either go or sort of hang around in the car park collecting their wages for another 2 or 3 years. Like, was that fella at Chelsea, Winston Reid, whatever his name was?
He's still there, mate.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to him. If I was a footballer, I would definitely not voluntarily cancel my contract. Yeah, then they'll all go. And then you've got the kind of older players whose contracts are running out and they're not likely to be renewed, but who are still kind of legends. So, like, you know, Yaya, I think Zabaleta's contract's running out, players like that. I would expect neither of them to get a new contract, as unfortunate as it is. I'd love them to stay around forever, but I just can't see it happening. Caballero's another one. He he's an all right backup goalkeeper, but I think his contract's up and he's 35. And then the third category is like the kill list category. So that's your Otamendi, Kolarov, them sort of people. You just think, surely they've got to go. And if not, they should be killed. Just so they're not there. Like, Otamendi is just, he's a disaster. I've never known anyone, apart from Claudio Bravo, to have gathered so much hatred from the fans in such a short space of time as Otamendi. He's a disaster.
Is it one of those things like, is he just bad, or is he playing like a twat as well?
Well, he always plays like a twat, and he spent his first season, half of his time in the opposition half, like, as in level with David Silva a lot of the time, and you're just like, what are you doing? Like, why are you there? How did you get there? Like, and then the other half of time spent on his arse or making mistakes. But the theory kind of going around amongst some of my friends at the moment is he's so annoying and he's so easy to hate because the gap between how hard he thinks he is and how hard he actually is just so huge, and it just makes you hate him because he like struts around going into these big tackles and he always comes off second best. And it's just like, oh, it's horrible to watch. He always gets caught out. Can't organise a defence. I think we were quite fortunate for so long to have kind of company at the peak of his powers where even, you know, he made the odd personal mistake, but he was absolutely peerless when it came to organising everyone else. And since then, it's like we've gone from sort of Demichelis, Otamendi, Mangala, none of them have got the head to sort of actually tell people what to do for 90 minutes. And this is also combined at the same time we lost Joe Hart. Again, I understand he's got his critics. I think all his critics are wrong, but I understand why people might not rate him. But he was excellent at organising the people in front of him, and the difference between him and Bravo, like, you can literally hear it in the ground. Like, I used to be able to hear Joe Hart from my seat a lot, telling people what to do, like when to push up. I haven't heard a peep out of Bravo all season, and you can see it has an effect. You can see it.
That was a pretty divisive move, wasn't it? Because Hart, if I believe correctly, is a bit of a fan's favourite, isn't he?
Yeah, he absolutely is. He's been on City's books. I think next year will be his 10th year he's been on City's books. You know, he's won FA Cup, 2 Premier Leagues. He's been vocal. He's been excellent for us. And like he has his critics again. And I said that a second ago, and I do understand it. But at the same time, he's been brilliant for City, and he always stood up for the team and the fans and the club and that. And it's hard not to love him, really. And the way he left, or was forced to leave, and it didn't go down very well. And it's like, oh, he got put on in the second leg against Steaua Bucharest for a sort of farewell to the fans. And everyone was singing like City's number one and singing his name for the whole game. And then, so I can't even remember who it was, but someone was saying, oh, that must have been awkward for Guardiola. It's like, don't care. It's not the point. And he's doing all right at Torino, apparently. But I hope whatever happens, I hope there's some sort of way he can come back, even though there's not. And that's definitely a dream, because Pep's not going to change his style. And he's made a point of saying he doesn't think Joe Hart's up to it, which is, it's a shame. But yeah, 2 Premier Leagues, that's awesome. And he'll always be remembered wherever he goes.
Should you let him go to Liverpool? That's like the big link, isn't it?
I mean, I could see it happening. I wish it wouldn't. I really, really, really hope it doesn't. Maybe City will just do that thing where they say they're not selling to a title rival. You know, he might end up staying in Italy or going to Juventus or one of the Milans or something, because Buffon loves Joe Hart. Like, he's always rated him extremely highly as one of the top three keepers in the world, and he's done it repeatedly. So if he stayed in Italy, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And I mean, if I got offered a job in Italy getting paid tens of thousands of pounds a week, I'd probably take that.
Be quite good, that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be pretty sound. Like, he's living in Turin at the moment. Like, that's not bad.
You could see him at Juve. Like, I mean, how long's Buffon? Buffon probably be playing till he's 70, though, won't he? So.
Yeah, he's pretty in shape still, I think. But, well, I don't even know.
Terrifying, like, eagle-like face, though, Buffon.
Yeah. I think, I mean, he has got a pretty terrifying face, but I reckon if anyone's earned it, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Earned the right to look sort of intimidating and eagle-like, it's definitely him.
He's good at catching balls, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know what? A goalkeeper who can catch a ball, that's apparently a bit of a rarity these days. Well, maybe that's only at City. Your keeper can catch a ball quite well.
He's right. One thing he cannot do, though, is kick a ball for shit. So that's why I'm quite happy in a way. It means you lot aren't going to sign him. So.
Does he just beam it into the stands and the dugout quad?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
A lot, does he?
Yeah, his. I think they've all really got a weakness, to be honest, aside from maybe like someone like Buffon or perhaps a Neuer. But Lloris his distribution is woeful. As you'll see, like really, like comically bad at times as well.
Okay, but that's encouraging.
The amount he gets us off the hook, though, like by being generally amazing at everything else, is, you know, what?
Yeah, last minute saves on the line, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that kind of amazing reflexes.
I mean, he's not going to go anywhere, is he? I mean, what is he now? He's a bit older than you sort of think, isn't he, as well?
He's only just turned 30.
But I mean, I had him in my head for ages as like 25.
Yeah, yeah.
So, oh, no, he's not. Because that would have been pretty much you set for life if he was 25. Mm-hmm. Don't know, what do you reckon? Do you reckon he's a bit old to go somewhere else now? Or
I don't know. Stuff, I think it's hard to know where he'd really go, because he's actually, he's got a fairly decent, he seems like a good lad, Lloris. He's got a fairly decent principled stance on like PSG. He doesn't like PSG, for example. He doesn't like what they've done to the French league and so on and so forth. I don't know if he'd be lured away by, you know, just on a moneyed basis. So he's always kind of maintained that he joined Tottenham, you know, from Lyon, who are a Champions League club, but he joined Tottenham because he saw there was a bigger vision there and yada, yada, yada.
You almost kind of a stuff. Project then.
Yeah, a bit. And I think, you know, the only one I could really see happening is maybe, but highly unlikely, if it were a Barca or Real, you know, that's kind of, you can be said of any player pretty much, can't it?
Oh, yeah, basically. Well, I mean, who in the world wouldn't go there, really? I mean, we as fans were like, well, Real are kind of disgusting and Barcelona aren't much far behind. But for footballers, they kind of revere those places, don't they?
Yeah, it's the Mecca, isn't it, really, for football players. But how what do you make of Spurs at the moment, mate? I mean, how are you feeling going into this game? Because I mean, you obviously your last result was awful, but
yes,
I'm you know, there seems to be sort of almost an alarming level of cocksureishness amongst quite a few Spurs fans that we're going to sort of, you know, we'll have them, we'll have this lot. I sort of saw quite that sort of sentiment coming through as you were playing against Everton. And I think my big concern is always that a manager like Guardiola, for all his flaws, learns a lot more about his side in a game like that Everton one than he does, say, if you were to have just beaten them routinely 1-0.
I think that's fair. I mean, I'd be amazed if Guardiola didn't have some sort of specific plan for Spurs. And I think it'll be a lot closer than the kind of our last results would predict. I mean, you will beat us, I think. And I think you'll score within the first 20 minutes and that'll be pretty much game over. But I don't think it'll be a runaway victory. And also, with the Spurs fans getting cocksure, I'm pretty sure that happened last season as well, didn't it? Like, towards the end, before it all went wrong. I seem to remember that.
Came third in the two-horse race and all that.
Yeah. But, you know what I mean? It's just... But what I've said... I think I said to you before about Spurs, and is it, you're obviously a really good team, and you've got some great players, and they work really well together, and Pochettino's obviously he's going to be a top manager. I don't think he's quite there yet, but it all comes down to the issue of I'll probably fully buy into it when you actually win something.
Yeah.
I don't want to be harsh about it, but
that's fair.
I thought the same about City before we won the FA Cup. You know, it's like, it's great playing amazing football and that, but you do actually have to at some point kind of jump that last hurdle and win something. And I don't know what that'll be or when it'll be for you. Presumably it'll be when rather than if with the way you're playing at the moment, but it's a mental barrier. And as we've seen kind of every time in very recent seasons, Spurs have come up against a proper mental barrier. You all haven't managed to jump it.
No, this is it. The big challenges we have bottled, for want of a better word, really.
And that's the thing, because even though you're playing much better than we are at the moment, if it came down to last day of the season, you know, if whoever won out of our teams won the title, I would back City every single time at the moment, because I've just got more evidence that these City players have won when they're up against it, you know, and I've got absolutely none that Spurs players have. And I don't want to start like kind of a fight about it or anything, because
good, mate. You don't want to start fighting me. I'm well hard.
But you know what I mean, like, I think you'll beat us, but yeah, I'm just not fully having this Spurs team until you've actually won something.
I think that's a more than fair point.
Yeah, and like, you know, it's all very well. Like, fans should be like, you know, you're playing so well. Fans definitely should be enjoying it. You've got to make the most of this stuff. Life's short and kind of often terrible. So when your football team's doing well, you should make the most of it. But it'd be nice to see Spurs win something.
Do you think finishing above Arsenal counts as winning something? Because they seem to treat that as winning something when they finish above us.
No, I'm not... It depends. If you finish fourth and push them to fifth, definitely. Like, I ran a poll on Typical City once where it's like, would you rather win the Premier League and United finish 17th or come second and they finish 18th? And it's like, definitely the second one, definitely. Because, like, it's not technically a trophy, but it sort of is at the same time. Because, you know, beating your rivals is fun and football's meant to be a laugh. I don't know. Can you see Arsenal dropping out of top four this season, though?
I don't even know with them. You know, they're such a strange team, aren't they? You know,
they're
all over the place. You can never really predict. I think the most damning thing I can say of Arsenal nowadays is that, like, they're just there. You know, like they're just a club that's just, they're just kind of there. You just sort of think, yeah, they're Arsenal. They're decent, but whatever. You know, Sanchez is good, but rest of them are kind of...
A bit stroppy recently, aren't they?
Mm.
Allegedly, he's had a bit of a strop recently, which is understandable, I think. But even how much he's pulled them all through on his own at the moment.
That's it. I don't know. They're a weird club. I know I'm biased, but to me, like they're quite a boring team nowadays. They're quite characterless. There's not really a lot of identity there, other than Arsenal fan TV laughing at that when they fuck up. You know,
that's about it. I definitely go through stages of Arsenal fan TV because I sort of instinctively despise all fan telly channels and the people on them. But Arsenal fan TV, it's kind of transcends the genre a little bit, doesn't it?
It's a cultural phenomenon.
It's like surrealist stuff. Like I still don't believe that those people actually exist in real life. Like if it turned out that they were character actors, I wouldn't even break stride. It's just like, yep. That makes perfect sense.
You know, the pirate guy, Bully?
Yeah.
I've seen him, he cropped up in I can't even remember the name of the film now. But there's a British film. It's about a homeless guy trying to travel back home for Christmas. He's up in Scotland. Well, he's not travelling home. He's in Scotland. And he's trying to travel to his brother's place. And his brother lives in London. And he's going all the way across the country, but there's one scene in a homeless shelter, and Bully pops up. He's not playing Bully. He's playing a homeless guy in a homeless shelter, and he's just it's bizarre.
These are things I just don't. You know,
I'm going to find the name of the film for you, and I'll tweet it to you or something. But
I'll have a look. But like, there are certain things that happen in the world that I just. They're just unexplainable. Like, how did that come to pass? Like, who got in touch with him and asked him if he wanted to be in a film? I don't know. Arsenal fan TV, man.
That's it. So
the Spurs have a telly channel.
Yeah, we had one, Spurred On, set up by Shotglass as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The conglomerate behind all these independent fans.
The authentic voice of the fans set up by a TV production company. But
I did think it was strange how these authentic voices of the fans all seem to have quite expensive high-end equipment and stuff like that.
And polished production values. And
yeah, they did seem to spend a lot of time on editing and production. It was quite strange.
I think that's something I can probably give Arsenal fan TV. I've got to be careful how many plaudits I give anything to do with Arsenal. No. You get in trouble for wearing like a red item of clothing. Do you lot have that, the whole never red thing? Not on a match day, but like,
not really. We do it sometimes, sort of as a piss take about Spurs fans saying it to each other because it's become a bit of a thing on the internet. We've all noticed it. Spurs fans being like, what's that red thing for, mate? We do it sometimes with Man United, but, you know, anything goes with United fans, doesn't it?
It does. I've seen some of their awful banners that get shared.
Their banners are bad. The 9/11 United in grief one was perhaps the pick.
Things like that, there's a certain place for things like that, isn't there, really? And it's, you know.
Well, football banners, yeah. I reckon the Ground Zero is probably not the one.
No, you know,
seems selfish.
It's quite bizarre, but that's probably quite a good place to leave our discussion, I reckon, Alex. We'll leave the listeners musing on that one. But you reckon you're going for a Spurs win?
Yeah, I reckon you'll win by, I don't know, 2 goals.
Bloody
and up. I reckon you'll score within the first 20 minutes and it'll be over by then.
All right, and I'll end it on one final question. If you could take one player from this current Spurs team, who would it be and why?
Goalkeeper, Lloris, because our goalkeeper appears to be scared of getting hit by the ball. And he just lets in loads and loads of goals. Against Everton, he didn't save a single shot. Awesome. I think he's let in, what is it, the first shot on target in 8 games this season, I think. I hate him.
There you have it, folks. Right, cheers, Alex. Thanks for your time, mate. Right, cheers, Alex. Man City. Bad bastards.
It's a big game. Big game coming up, lads. I tweeted out, and I did say this last season as well, but I tweeted out the other day that, fucking hell, I sound like my dad. I tweeted out...
got on the computer.
Oh, God. but I tweeted that I think if we beat Man City, we're going to go on and win the league. That's just my... That's the feeling in me waters. The only slight actual foundation I have to this is that it's more points off of title rivals, and I back kind of, you know, City to at least take some points off of the other title rivals, whereas I feel that we've gotten... How many... We've got a quite a decent return against sort of the other contenders thus far, don't we? I think...
I think we're third in the top six in mini league at the minute.
Yeah.
Okay, so... could be better, but it's not bad. Not bad at all. Do you... early predictions, but do you sort of, you know, can you consider us part of a title race now? Because it's getting to that stage of the
mate,
season.
I don't think that's deniable. You're second after Christmas, yeah?
Also, I mean, not this weekend. Next weekend, Chelsea and Liverpool play each other. So someone's dropping points there, and that's pretty interesting. If we knock over Man City this week, and I think we've got, I want to say, Sunderland quite soon.
Yeah, Sunderland towards the end of the month, because that's when we put the date on the Sun chat.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think actually Sunderland is the very... Yeah, I'm getting up now. Okay, so Sunderland's on the last day of the month.
How excited are you for Sunderland?
Yeah, very excited, mate. Really, really looking forward to that. And then we've got quite a nice little run of games. And of course we're title contenders. I mean, again, that is kind of another... a bit of a bugbear chat of mine, kind of when people sort of start saying in around October, so can we consider X to be title challengers? Where in reality, it's a needless debate. But yes, we are.
Are we going to do it, Seb?
You know what? Last year I said, I reckon we will if we beat City away. And of course, we beat City away and we didn't. I think if we beat Liverpool, I'm not quite sure. Liverpool, I think, is one of the first weeks of February. Unless there's some FA Cup nonsense gets in the way. But if we win at Anfield, I'm confident.
I like the tap on the table.
That was authoritative, wasn't it? That was my... Can I have a think? This is my authority. This is what I think.
See, 11th a bit of gravitas. February, the Liverpool game.
11th of February at Anfield. Yeah, okay. So, and that's probably our last difficult game of the season, I'd say.
Who are Chelsea going to drop points to?
I think Liverpool will beat them. Or take a point off them, at least. We'll take 2 points off them.
I could see Arsenal beating them.
No, Arsenal the one
they've
that you
They've still
don't,
got to go to Old Trafford as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got to go to Old Trafford. They've got to go to... City have got to go there, of course. Interesting. There are plenty of places where Chelsea can drop points, I think. We've probably got... Off the top of my head, I can't remember what it was, but I remember looking at our remaining fixtures compared to the teams around us about a week ago and thinking, yeah, actually, we've got quite a sizable advantage there. So, yeah, interesting times.
Interesting to see how we handle the Europa League from here on in, to see if we do just... It's a complete change 11 or not. It'll be sort of... Because it's a cup that, you know, we discussed it and we said we can win it. So it's one of those where...
I reckon it'll be second string, though. I find it hard. Yeah. Well, not like kind of half.
If we manage to, like, sort of...
Do you know what I mean?
Fluke our way into the quarterfinals, then I think he might be tempted to sort of start chucking the starters back in. But we'll see. That's just another sort of... That's a side story, isn't it? A second sort of a thing. But, you know, 50,000 people have bought tickets for Wembley, so I don't think they'll take too kindly if they've got sort of a complete shite 11 that's been just put out as lambs to slaughter. So,
guess, but he did that against Dortmund, didn't he? Like, he doesn't, like, he gives zero fucks. Like,
he does not care.
I don't think the intention's good, though. I want to take lambs to slaughter back. Cause
I know what
that
you mean.
Was sort of when Harry Redknapp would pick sort of 12 players from the under 16s that we'd literally fucking never seen first team shirt before. That was lambs to slaughter. But at least, you know, when Onomar and Wink start, at least they've had time in the first team and they've actually been trained by Pochettino for a large amount of time, so it's not a complete piss take.
I mean, if I'm honest,
I honestly believe that some of those players that Redknapp picked, he didn't even know their first names, like, because you know what he was like with youth players. Yeah, he could not possibly care less. and all of a sudden they come in, and I mean, he can pick some of those players out of a lineup.
You know, in America, they say, "I could care less." That's their version of that saying.
Really?
Yeah, you know, how we say, "Oh, I couldn't care less about that." They say, "I could care less." It freaks me out every time I see it on like a TV show or something. I think they've misspoken, but I googled it once, and it's the way that they've bastardized our language.
Endearing yourself to the American listeners.
There, none of them are left, mate. We know that's this. True. They've all gone. That's true. They've all gone.
Man City, though, are we? They've just had a horrific result against Everton, and they're, you know, Bravo is all over the shop. The defence is all over the shop.
This is the one thing that worries me about the going in.
This is it, mate. This is like I don't really look at that and think, kind of, you know, this is good, we can piss this. I look at that and think, for all the kind of talk of him not really adapting very well to the Premier League and being stubborn and so on and so forth, let's be honest, Guardiola's not a mug. You know, he's a smart bloke, and he learns a lot more from a result like that than them going and trouncing Everton 3-0, to be honest. That's what concerns me, to be honest.
It's the mentality change as well. When we went there and won last year, to sort of call back an off-air conversation, we could John Wilkes move it, we could just creep up out of fucking nowhere and do him. But because we're going into this one and people will be talking us up as favourites, I've not checked the odds yet, but I imagine bookies would have us favourites.
At least evens, right?
At least. Especially given form.
I'd be surprised. I would think we'd still be outsiders just on history. And just because of the flow of money, everybody will think our Spurs will bottle that.
I think there's a nationwide feeling of distrust towards Manchester City at the moment. Sort of the fraudiola type thinking has taken over somewhat, especially after that Everton loss. And he's failed in quite a lot of the big games to really get a foothold in them. Our one kicked it off, obviously, but it's only the Manchester derby that he really won. Arsenal, obviously, but they sort of don't know their ass from their elbow whenever the shit hit the fan.
They do look terrible. Well, like,
they look really vulnerable. But either way, we are 13-5.
I might put some money on that then, if bookies are being daft.
Because I think they're definitely taking.
Do you reckon that he's, you know, there's quite a lot of breathing room being afforded to him? This whole kind of, the fallback always seems to be, well, you know, he's trying to, you know, he's trying to build like a sports car out of rusty parts and so on and so forth. That's a squad that's had a lot of money spent on it, you know?
It is, but it's so lopsided. I think that kind of there's a difference between spending a lot of money and spending a lot of money well. I'd say that kind of the front half of that side is very effective, but, you know, the middle and the back of it, it's pretty ropey.
Yeah, but you could have said that about Spurs before Pochettino took over.
I completely agree. But I kind of, if you think back to what Spurs were like in the first, you remember that first 6 months under Pochettino, where, I mean, all the sensible people that we talk to, you all conceded the same thing, that he's trying to do something and it's going to take a little bit of time, because we started to pick up results, but we were, up until probably about Christmas of that year, frequently fucking awful.
Yeah.
I mean, fair. I mean, that, I remember Villa and Hull, you know, games we won, but games I still really don't know how we won. I remember Swansea outplaying us at the Liberty Stadium as well, and then Eriksen getting that last minute goal. And it's just, I don't know, I think that we had a little bit of good luck in that sequence, and that kind of disguised how badly we were playing. Whereas, I don't know, City have been taken apart pretty ruthlessly by Leicester and Everton, of course. And
there's a perception issue as well, because sort of there's that recency bias with how well Spurs have been playing compared to Man City. But if they knock us off on the weekend, they're level on points with us.
Yeah.
So in terms of the table never lying, it's sort of the way we view the game is through a certain lens, and
that's
you can
true.
Only take form into
it's
account.
It's all relative, isn't it? I mean, we're Spurs. We haven't spent what they've spent. We don't have £50 million players, you know, in every part of our side. And so what counts as a good season for us is always going to be slightly less than whatever's demanded of Guardiola. And also because he's Guardiola, of course.
Yeah, there's a weird sort of, again, with sort of the my bugbear with the coverage of it, there's no middle ground,
yeah.
or no middle ground that I've seen with people who appreciate what he does and sort of like the way in which he approaches the game and his philosophy of the game, and those who want to discount everything he's ever achieved.
Or Raj, that he just thinks about the game in quite a lot of detail, which is quite, I mean, charming is the wrong word, but it is quite endearing. It's quite novel. And it, bringing someone like that into a culture where it is very binary and, you know, it's a sea of Pardews and Allardyces. You know, to have someone that is... you know, almost, I suppose, a kind of football's version of an intellectual. It's interesting.
But it's, yeah, you've got people who do eulogise about him and even eulogise about him in the face of sort of contrary evidence.
Yeah.
And then you've got the opposite side of that, and it's really strange. You see, it reminds me somewhat of AVB when he was with us, especially, because even his attitude towards the press is very similar, because AVB had no time whatsoever for those people that didn't want to speak to him about football, in a very similar sort of way to... the way Guardiola handles them as well. I think Pep might have slightly bigger stones and a bigger ledge to stand on when it comes to sort of, you know, acting up a little bit, because he's won a bit more
European
and he's been
Cups.
At bigger clubs.
Yeah.
Whereas AVB was just was chippy because he sort of had to sit and look at Neil Ashton in the face every week. Which
I think to avoid kind of like just lumping all the foreign blokes into one neat little package. One thing I would say, though, again, is it just makes me fucking appreciate Pochettino so much more, the way in which he just handles the press so unemotionally. I mean, he snaps every now and again. We've only seen that creeping through at kind of times of immense stress. But for the most part, he just doesn't give him it. He doesn't give him anything still to this day.
He's quite... I was a little... I mean, I the only time I've ever seen Pochettino do anything other than just play a straight bat was when... the West Ham game, when he was asked about Harry Winks, and he kind of, ordinarily he's the kind of guy you think, yeah, you quite like to be out of here in 2 or 3 minutes, if you possibly can be. He unprompted spoke about Winks for about 10 minutes, and just sort of glowing. He was like a proud dad. It was actually quite sweet to see. But he's very, I don't know. He's
did you see Bilic at the weekend in his press conference?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
It's absolutely fantastic. West Ham have just put on that performance. They've won like 3-0. Andy Carroll scored that absolute worldie. And first question he gets is about Dimitri Payet, and he sort of looks down and like humps, and he goes, "Can we not talk about Carroll, Randall, for fuck's sake? Just ask me about someone else." And he apologises for swearing, but it's just one of the most brilliantly sincere moments of management I've seen for a while, just because it's that frustration of, we've just won 3-0 and he's just done something I've never thought Andy Carroll can ever do. Why are you asking me about Payet? And that sort of underlines what we were saying about sort of the questions. These, can you imagine Pep Guardiola if he was in that position? He'd have walked it out.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can really blame him either, because it is sort of...
Oh, if you were in that situation, you'd do the same thing, I reckon. You'd just...
Oh, I would, yeah.
Not you. I mean, we know you would, but like one would.
I'd just jump into the pit, start swinging for him. But
yeah,
it's weird, isn't it? I feel like I've complained a lot today.
Oh, it's fine. Let it out, mate. Let it out. Lee Brown at Lee Brown 2 asks. This is some questions, but do City, if that wasn't abundantly clear,
it's not just that Lee Brown you keep in your basement.
Yeah, a new character that you're going to introduce out of nowhere.
For fuck's sake.
He's watched Split by him like Shyamalan, and he thought it's a good idea. This is his other.
I do really want to watch that actually. Do City need to stop Spurs, or do we need to work out how to stop City?
I think we just play our own game.
Spit both,
yeah. Spit both, but I think we play our own game.
Yeah, we. I think we're really well positioned to beat them, because, you know, I mean, same as was true back in October. I mean, their weaknesses seem to really align quite nicely with our strengths, and there's no continuity in either his back four or whatever the hell he thinks he's doing with that midfield in front. If he plays Zabaleta there again, we'll eat them alive.
If you play Yaya Toure there, then, you know, Victor.
Yeah, Yaya Toure, yeah, exactly. Like, you put Dembele and Wanyama and Ali and Harrison.
I love Wanyama.
You can't. He can't line up as he. I don't think he will, because I think he'll be informed by what happened at Goodison Park.
Do you think he'll drop Bravo?
Was that?
No, but, well, I don't think so. I think is a strong enough case for saying that Caballero is definitively better? I don't. He's okay, but I mean,
just kind of stopping the rot, giving Bravo a bit of headspace, let him come back after a few games. Because
yeah, makes sense. But I mean,
it's kind of what he did with Hart, isn't it? Well, not Guardiola, but it's what
Pellegrini did. Pellegrini did with Hart.
Brought Willie in for a bit, and
I tell you, the thing about that Bravo stuff is that I completely accept the criticism of him, but at the weekend I just thought, well, which one of those goals was he supposed to keep out? I mean, because he wasn't great, but then he was probably the least shit of all of those defensive players, wasn't he? So it's like, you know,
John Stones had a horror everybody, show.
Mate, not even so, Otamendi.
John Stones is apparently a really emotional lad, though. Do you not remember when we spoke to the Everton lads about when he was supposed to go the first year, and sort of they caught him crying in a service station and he was walking out because Everton fans were asking him if he was going to stay?
So
or go.
Heartless, Jack.
And sort of, you know, so I think that might have been a bit much for him to go back. It does sound like he's sort of George Costanza, doesn't it, when he's crying in a service station. But I feel sorry for the lad.
At the debaser,
I think Stones a really good player. Actually, I really like Stones.
At debaser 92, who should replace Super Jan, Davies or Wimmer? This is a good question, actually.
I think we jinxed this, didn't we, Seb, on the last
one? Yeah, we did.
Ben Davies in a back three, and
what a useful option it would be, and, you know, why not give it a try?
Yeah, I said why not give it a try. I didn't mean, you know, go and snap your ankle so we can actually give it a good run. But I'd give it to Davies because he plays so well there for Wales, and he gives that extra sort of go forward that Wimmer's slightly dodgier with. We can't obviously forget how good Wimmer was last year in exactly this same situation, but given it's a different formation and you need the centre-back to do something slightly different from that position. I think Davies has actually been quite good playing left-back of late as well. He's obviously not the same player Danny Rose is, and what they do in that position is completely different. It's like comparing two musicians. They both play guitar, but it's of a completely different genre. So you can't really discount one. Obviously, Danny Rose is the much better of the two, but you can't really say that Ben Davies is shit just because he's doing something different with it. But I'd give him a go. I'd quite like to see what he could do there, because I think he's earned a chance to prove himself in the first team. He's never spoken out of turn. He's never sort of been anything less than a model professional. Even in a recent interview, I've heard him sort of say that he's happy to be there and he feels like he's learning, and watching Danny Rose is good for his game. So I don't think there's anything like that. And the stuff with Wimmer sort of leaving every window can't be anything more than his agent putting his name out there. So that does slightly, you know, annoy me a little bit. So
I would be a little bit worried about Wimmer against Sterling and Aguero and De Bruyne. I think I'd go for the mobility with Davis as well.
That's what I was going to say. It's almost like a physical thing, isn't it? I think with Wimmer, you've got a kind of taller, more imposing figure who you might want in against, you know, if you're playing against West a Brom. Salomon Rondon, you know, but...
Yeah.
However, exactly. When you're playing against a team like City, I think there is that case for Davies, really, to play it wrong. And like you say, Raj, it's not really technically a centre-back as such, is it? Like, it's a bit more adaptive than that when you've...
Especially the way Jan's been playing it as well. It's like Jan of old, where he's going on these marauding runs and all sorts.
Yeah, it's like Villas-Boas Vertonghen, isn't it?
It's an absolutely miserable blow, that. It's pretty much, it's probably the rest of the season now, isn't it? I think they said eight to 10 weeks.
2 months.
Yeah.
2 months. So he should be back in good time.
It's fucked. It's over. Rest of the season.
No,
I don't know. Ligaments. I'm not convinced, to be honest.
Mate, you've gone from like 12 minutes from we're going to win the league to for fuck's sake.
No. I don't think that derails us. I have enough faith in the standings. And I have enough faith in Alderweireld. That's it. There you go. Whoever's next to him, I think he's got that thing that Ledley King had now, whereby you know, Dawson, I think is a fine and decent enough defender for what we were at the time, but you know, no doubt was he made to look a hell of a lot better every time he played alongside King. That's kind of what we got going for us. And I think
Alderweireld's kind of our like defining factor against anybody, though. It's sort of, you've got Aguero, we've got Alderweireld, you've got Costa, we've got Alderweireld. You know, I don't, with him in the side, I'm not really afraid of other teams because, you know, on the basis that we'd always sort of, you know, deep in our own half, he counters the aerial threat. He's mobile enough to deal with like a nippier, you know, sort of more dynamic forward. I mean, it's just, it's not like the Kabul problem against Aguero. Where you used to just shit yourself because you knew what was going to happen. He was just going to get ragdolled by everybody and made to yeah.
A shout out again to Eric Dier, who I think is readapting back to this kind of new role really well again. Sort of started off quite sketchily. I think there are a few iffy moments at the start of the season, but touch wood, he seems to be pretty imperious as well.
Absolutely.
So found his feet because I can't. To be fair, at the moment, I can't really see him taking one of those midfield slots, really. If he wasn't in this position, but I don't know, I'm quite liking this formation that we're playing at the moment. It seems as if that Pochettino is just playing players in their best positions, as opposed to trying to sort of shoehorn a load of players into a system that, you know, can kind of accommodate them. It genuinely seems to be that he's looked at what he has available to him and is playing in a way that brings out the best in all of them.
You know what I find really interesting is that because the two outside centre backs essentially in a way do a little bit of a fullback role without the ball, it allows Walker and Rose to be much higher up the pitch.
Mm. Danny Rose is all over the place now, as
mate.
Well.
But they're so, both.
He was playing right wing for one of our goals on the weekend.
He was like playing. I can't remember who tweeted it out, but someone said it looks like watching Alaba now, and Jonathan Lee said that exactly, and it wasn't a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, superficially maybe, but he looks very comfortable everywhere he is, and I suppose the only criticism that ever lay level at Pochettino is that sometimes his attacking football can be a little bit narrow, and this three centre back system has kind of cured that. We've got so much width now that it's you know, putting those two players in those kind of positions it seems to be really key to what we're trying to do.
Interesting one here from Joe Patrick at J.
Oh, somebody with two first names, you can never trust them.
At JA Patrick 200 asks.
Sorry, I'm sure you're a nice person, but that is a general rule for life.
How will Lamella be integrated back into the team? Is an injury to our current best 11 his only route? This is a good question.
Interesting question.
I'm a massive fan of Lamella, but I wouldn't put him back in now at the moment, to be honest.
I think what we've got is a definitive first 11 at the moment. And I wouldn't, again, just like you, Jack, I'm a massive Lamella. First of all, the caveat is I don't think a Lamella return sounds very imminent.
Nope.
He seems to have. He's got turf toe, hasn't he? Whatever he's got is that same sort of Danny Rose, like
some hip injury.
He'll be back next week for every week since like the last week of December.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't think it's just the injury, though, is it? I think there's some personal stuff going on as well. His family,
with his brother, and you know. I don't think he's even in England yet. Yeah. I think he's still in Rome.
Is Brian Lamella still on Twitter? I'll ask him. He'll
no, I think it's about Twitter. Brian Lamella. I think Brian Lamella's had some kind of issue.
Has he lost his Twitter password?
No, genuinely no idea, but there's something quite weird has happened. I think I've heard something about like a mental health issue, or perhaps this is going by Twitter here, so you know, but there's something, some sort of family issue that, you know.
Well, he did tweet welcome summer in December, so maybe he's like, something's happened to him.
Well, I think either way, I think it's probably smart to rule Lamella out for the rest of the...
Is it summer when it's winter in Argentina?
Perhaps, it could be, yeah, like Australia and...
Or maybe he was being sarcastic. I don't know, Brian, what's wrong with you?
Wonder if he listens.
Do you genuinely remember when he used to tweet on a weekly basis?
Oh yeah, yeah. He used to say my brother's going to be in the starting lineup this week, and you can tell the Spurs management was just like, "No, he's not. No, you've said that."
Oh dear.
Anyway,
that's well. There we go, lads. I think that's that feels like.
I think Eric Lamella's one of those who'll he'll play in the Europa League and sort of have those moments there, won't he? And
I really don't think we'll see him for the rest of the season. Actually, guys, I mean, from the sounds of everything, it seems like it's kind of. And also, there's no necessity to it. I mean, if he's got a family issue,
we need
a deep
squad.
We do, but I mean, you know, we've kind of got this sort of. I mean, now the sort of the second 11 includes players like Sissoko and Son and
Kodu.
You know, players that you don't really want to see in the Premier League at the moment. And so I'm sure they'll get plenty of time in the Europa League.
He's supposed to be in Rome with a physio, isn't he?
He's what?
He's in Rome with a physio.
Yeah, he's still there apparently. So I've got to believe that sort of
but
once he gets
there's Tottenham officials with him out there apparently as well.
Yeah, he hasn't just gone to Rome AWOL. Hasn't just.
It's not like when Carlos Tevez went to go play.
No, he's not golfing in Buenos Aires. No, he's recovering. But he. You got to believe that as and when he comes back, he hasn't trained since October, so you know he's not going to come back ready to play.
I've almost got the creeping feeling we might not see him at Spurs again. That's just
no, don't do that.
Yeah, I don't know, mate. This feeling in my waters once again. I'm going to start going with it, mate. It's 2017. You see what you know. We placed
well, it's falling apart.
Well, we placed all this conviction in kind of you know no, that won't happen. Because systems are in place, but they don't mean anything anymore, mate. None of it does. That's it. Spurs are going to win the league. Spurs are going to win the double, actually. They're going to win the double.
The one thing that I said that I stick by is that I think we'll go the full year undefeated at home, which
that's
means
nice.
A lot.
It's a nice sentence.
I really like that.
As well,
really, really would like that.
That's the one thing that I...
imagine if it was just against Arsenal. Imagine.
Why do you always go there?
Because I can't help it.
Mate, we got until April to worry about
it's
that.
Like picking
picking
a scab, you know?
Got something wrong with you.
Yeah, plenty of things. Right. Let's kill it with fire. We'll. If you do want to listen to any of the previous episodes of Rule the Ridge podcast, you can do so on Acast, on iTunes, on our website rtrpod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @rtr_pod. Listen to it, give us some iTunes reviews, send us some abuse. Come on, you Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.